Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host. I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me all over social media at PW Torch. Not at PW Torch. at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. I don't know where I can be found, folks. I really don't. I'm getting old. Here's some proof. Right about as we were going to start the show, I realized I hadn't gotten any of my podcasting equipment, and it wasn't where it was supposed to be because I left it exactly where it was the last time I did a podcast. And in looking for my podcast equipment, I moved my podcast equipment out of the way so I could look for it.
So it's kind of like looking for your cell phone while you're holding your cell phone.
Which I, too, have done. But I think that one's a little more universal. I don't know, folks. The brain, it does addle as you get a little bit older. Yeah, you can call us. What is it? 515-605-9345. No callers of yet on this show. Seems like so much to talk about, what with the draft. But we've got you listening. I see you there. But we don't have anybody looking to be on the show. And you can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Let's talk two things to start, because we knew that they were going to have to kind of tell us what was going on with all the women's champions on this show. Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, the women's tag champions, they were called up to SmackDown. I'm still getting used to this. SmackDown. Yep. And Indy Hartwell was called up to Monday Night Raw, probably to continue the way in some form or some shape. Still don't remember if all of them are on the same show.
Except Austin Theory.
Okay. Which makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, which makes sense for a couple of reasons in the next development for him. Doesn't make sense for him to be in there with the way and just standing out like a sore thumb. So we knew we had to get some answers, and we kind of got both answers, but didn't completely get either. So Fire and Dawn said if they won this championship match tonight with Caden Carter and Katana Chance, then they were going to take the NXT Women's Championships to SmackDown. And they did win. And after the match, 9:13 is your time of the match, which was dwarfed by a much longer gem of a match that we will talk about later. And Vic sold it like death, like, oh, they're taking the championships away to SmackDown. But if they had lost, then the championships would have gone to Raw. So, like, there was no stakes. There was no believable reason. Oh, man, if they had just had them beat a team that was on NXT and was still going to be on NXT, I feel like there would have been more doubt in who was going to win. So I don't know what the next step here is, but Fire and Dawn still the champions. As for the women's championship, singles championship, much less surprising stuff here even than that, as we have a champion who was A, called up, and B, injured. So she has vacated a championship that has been vacated quite a few times over the history of NXT. And there will be yet another tournament. So maybe Paige will win again, or maybe Charlotte will win another one. So there you go. We have no women's champion, but we saw more than 8 women fighting over the right to, at the end of this show, a schmoz with, I think I counted 11 women, but I didn't have a whole lot of time to actually try to count them all. Tiffany Stratton and Cora Jade, unsurprisingly, were kind of presented as the two that are the biggest threat. But the hugest threat looming over my entire life is that Nikita Lyons could be coming back and winning that championship.
I don't even want to think about that.
Nope, nor I. So let's not mention her again on the podcast. So there
you go. Can that just be a rule of thumb going forward?
Yeah, like even if she's a major part of the show, just don't.
Even if she's champion.
we treat her like a former champion that's no longer named.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that person could wrestle.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So, Bruce, who are you? And what do you think of all these women?
So, I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. And I'll touch on Hartwell first because I think this was more clear-cut. I said it last week. Last week with Nate that mostly, it seems like she was definitely injured. Probably a tournament coming. We get the tournament. So after reports came out about the draft kind of being a little bit hectic and a lot of wrestlers not even knowing where they were going until they were announced on the shows, I want to hazard a guess and say that the decision to draft Hartwell came after it, her injury was confirmed, and it was a way to make it more easy to get the title off of her than just the injury card by drafting her as well. So I think by doing that, you also give her time to heal up before she actually debuts on Raw, and with the ending to the show tonight, her being carried out by Loomis, it probably indicates that her and Loomis are going to be a thing on Raw together. And as Kelly was alluding to, probably going back to having a reunion with The Way. Now, they showed Jade, Stratton, and you know, I knew Stratton would be the first one, and then Valkyrie was the third one. I think the person that was most conspicuous by their absence, at least because I didn't see her, was Roxanne Perez, and she was the person who won the breakout tournament and I think the most recent of the women's tournament. So she could be the person they go back to after this. She was the person that most thought would win at, what was the card, Stand and Deliver. So that could be the familiarity factor. But, you know, I also advocated that they put the strap on Tiffany Stratton and just let her run with it, because I think out of characters, she has the most fully fledged character in the women's division, outside of, you know, Mako Satomura just being the badass. So I think Vision, I just hate that it's another tournament. The one thing we didn't get, though, are kind of the specifics of the tournament, who's going to be in it. I guess, you know, all the women there are potential, but how big is the tournament? It's going to be an 8-woman tournament. It's going to be a 4-woman tournament. It's going to be 12, 16. Are they basically going to run clean at the ring for this? Like, they haven't really given us that much yet, just because it was the very end of the show. So I'm going to be interested to see what comes out of that. And then when it comes to the women's titles, I think Vic also, you know, the line he brought up about being so despondent that the titles are going to go to SmackDown. During the match, he even asked if he brought up the point that, you know, maybe the title could be defended across all the shows. So for him to go from that to that within the same match is kind of a lack of coherency in his character and his presentation. But another thing that was brought up on Twitter is that there's a distinct possibility that what they do instead is merge the two championship titles. Is still Liv Morgan and Raquel Gonzalez as the champion on Raw and SmackDown? I have no idea. But they could do that. And if they decide not to do that, then they probably should have done what I was advocating, and that would be to have had a mystery team either take out one of them or have a team step up and say, I'm going to, you know, we're doing this for our show, whatever, and then kind of add them as a third. But now I want, again, what Kelly was bringing up, what are they going to defend across the three shows, as they said, or is it going to be emerging? Is it going to be a very infrequent thing? So a lot of questions coming out of the draft and the women's tag division in NXT, because really they still haven't given us any sort of not rule, but sort of a layout of how this is going to function moving forward.
Nathaniel Allen Nicholson. No, that was one of my friends in college. Nate, you know what your name is. Go ahead and run with this.
You know, after the day I had today, the last few weeks I've had, I'm not sure if I do know what my name is half the time, but I do know that, actually, I guess I do know what my name is, because it's my Twitter handle, Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter, Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, and I have one up tonight for you guys on pwtorch.com. to show what I thought, or let you know what I thought about the show, but also I'm here to do that now, so I'll just do it. Indy, so I think I disagree with Bruce about her being a last minute call up after the injury. It's certainly possible because what Bruce laid out, I mean, certainly makes sense. So it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case, but they leaned on her so much over the last, 6-8 months or so, not just in NXT, but I mean, they also had her, have she had a pretty decent showing in the Royal Rumble. So I kind of thought that a call up was inevitable for her this time around, but either way, whether it was planned or if it, was a last minute thing because of the injury, doesn't matter. I think it's well worth it. And, well deserved rather, well deserved. And, I think, especially if there is a reuniting of the way, whether it is just her and Dexter Lumis or, Johnny Gargano's involved as well. I know Gargano and Lumis have been, involved on the main roster quite a bit, over the last handful of months. So it'd be really cool to see them reunite. Yeah. And maybe even have some sort of an interaction with Austin Theory if they all wind up on the same brand. I don't even know who's on what brand anymore. And I could just look at my other tab where I have all of the changes open, but who wants to do that?
Or listen to us when we're talking, because we covered all that.
Do you expect me to remember what was said about 5 seconds ago, let alone,
gosh,
God,
I guess that would be
come
ideal.
On. Come on.
You are a podcaster. But,
But yeah, so I'm all for that. I'm all for you seeing some sort of reuniting or something. I'd like to hope that Indy is going to be more than just kind of like mid card on the main roster, but I unfortunately don't think so. At least not for the time being anyway. I can't see her debuting and then really hitting the ground running, making an impact and challenging for SmackDown or Raw Women's title anytime soon. I think if she does get to that point, it's going to be a year or two down the road. I think she's capable of it, but I don't think it's in the cards for her right yet. As far as the other women, we talked about the two tag teams. We got Caden Carter, Katana Chance, Alba Fire, Isla Dawn. All four, like Kelly was saying, all four of them going up to the main roster. So it really confused me because they were not making a big deal whatsoever about if the Caseys went up to Raw. But with the titles, if they won, but they like Kelly said, they sold it like death when, Isla Dawn and Alba Fire retained. So I don't get it. I really hate to see them combine both women's tag team titles. I feel like both the main roster and NXT, it's too big of a women's roster to just have one set of tag titles. I can understand the floating titles between Raw and SmackDown because, I feel like the women's tag division on the main roster, you kind of need to have, in order to have any sort of roster depth, you need to have them kind of float back and forth between the shows. But to add NXT to that, I feel like you're adding too much, and then you're not going to see those titles on one of those. You're only going to see those titles on one brand, for months at a time, while there's some sort of a feud going on. I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about it. Not that the NXT women's tag titles have really meant a whole hell of a lot since their inception, but, I don't know. I think I would rather them keep them separate if I had to make a decision right this second.
I think it would be hilarious. I think I'd be on board for this. If Fire and Dawn didn't vacate and they were just champions, and so they were like, okay, we're not going to vacate this championship because we know that everybody's sick of us vacating championships. So we are going to have a tournament or some kind of match or something to determine who those challengers are. And it takes a while, like weeks, to figure out who these challengers are. Fire and Dawn are like, oh, we have to come back for this. They're already mired in their own storylines on the main roster. They come down to slum it on NXT, and then they just beat them. And then, 2 months later, they do it again. And they're like champions for, 2 years, and it's never acknowledged on Raw and SmackDown. I think I'd be down for it. I think it would amuse me. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. I'm definitely crazy.
Yeah, I was going to say, we definitely know that.
But that that may or may not be the reason. So there you go. That that was that. You know, I'd like to save it for later, but I don't think I can go any longer without talking about Dragon Lee versus JD McDonagh. I knew when I saw that this match was going to be worked that it had the potential to be one of the best matches ever on NXT TV, and it absolutely was. Oh, man, it was just fire. And there was one absolutely horrifying moment where it looked like JD wasn't going to be able to tuck his head. I got up off my chair and, like, screeched because of what I thought was happening. And then I saw I was not alone. The crowd saw this as well. And at the very last moment, it looked – anybody who's seen footage of when Hayabusa became – quadriplegic or paraplegic. I think it is quadri.
Yeah.
And, anybody who's seen that footage, and unfortunately I have, it looked similar. Like it looked like he was going to land in the same way, even though the move where he got there was different. And I did see a major, major neck injury happen in a Dragon Lee match to his opponent, Hiromu Takahashi. Now, it's a coincidence.
Takahashi, which it's just, it's gonna happen at some point.
Yeah. Takahashi doesn't, the dude can't go at anything less than 100%. We love him for it, and we wish he wouldn't do it sometimes.
And he loves his neck bumps.
Oh, he does. He just loves to show that he can take them, but he's been out with two neck injuries, so maybe no more Hiromu? I don't know. At any rate, that was your mid-show main event. I actually really like it when the person who has been called up to the main roster wins a match, thus showing that they deserved to get the call-up. I'm a fan of when they win, and JD McDonagh did defeat Dragon Lee, even though I like Dragon Lee a lot. I think that this is the right call. It also gave this was more just a storyline building block for Dragon Lee. I mean, it gave JD a little boost on his way up. But Dragon Lee also got something started with Noam Dar. And we knew this is where it was going. And we knew this is probably how this was going to end. But Noam Dar gives McDonagh the slight opening he needs to hit the Devil Inside. And defeat Dragon Lee for his first TV loss on the brand. And, I mean, if you don't count the ladder match, and I don't, or the, wasn't a ladder match, five-way match that was not ladder involved. I'm sorry, I can't keep all the multi-man matches separate in my head. But yes, now Dragon Lee, perhaps primed to win the Heritage Cup. I love the rounds matches. I hope that we get to see some of them, but at any rate, I think it'll be fun. Dragon Lee working against super slimy Noam Dar, who is so slimy that JD McDonagh in an interview called him slimy. JD McDonagh. So there you go. Mid-show main event, 14 minutes, 58 seconds, McDonagh over Dragon Lee. And I was going to just say Lee, but I can't do that anymore because you got two baby faces named Lee. Nate.
Yeah, so go out of your way to watch this match. If you're not going to watch anything else on the show tonight, absolutely fire. I can't say enough about it. About that spot that you were talking about, you know, where it looked like JD might have landed on his head was certainly – like I recoiled myself and kind of made a little bit of a noise there. I don't think I stood up, but I was like you definitely felt it in your chest, that little like pang of adrenaline, like, oh God, you know. But thankfully everybody's good, everybody's fine, and you know, he was all right. I don't know. I'm torn on the finish for this match. And the hits and misses, I wrote the wrong person one. And I am torn because I do, from, you know, what Kelly's saying is like, I do like to see people that are going to be in roster win, because obviously it kind of it gives you a reason, like, hey, yeah, this person's winning. They deserve to go up the main roster. But at the same time, Dragon Lee, I feel like Dragon Lee needed the win more than JD did. JD is such a slime ball that he can always talk his way out of a loss. Whereas, you know, Dragon Lee, up-and-comer, up-and-comer on the brand, not necessarily in his career, but you know what I mean. But he's an up-and-coming star on the brand. I kind of would have thought they would have put him over a talent that's going up to the main roster to give him that little bit more credibility, I guess. You know, they could have told that story. I guess I'm okay with that either way, especially with the little post-match angle. You know, with Noam Dar and the Heritage Cup, as Kelly was talking about a little bit ago. To me, I guess it's really more of a nitpick than anything. But I don't know. I was expecting that we were going to see Dragon Lee win here. But, long again.
Yeah, I don't think Dragon Lee needed a win nearly as much as he needed a reason to fight. And now he's got a reason to fight. That's what I think he needed more.
Fair.
Than just any win. But
I'll go with that.
So now he's got his feud. Bruce.
Well, and if you're talking about who needs it more, or you know, Dragon Lee can't take a loss as bad. I mean, it was also an in match angle where Noam Dar distracted him long enough for Madonna to take over. So I think in that way they were trying to give him a little bit of protection and give McDonough sort of not the cleanest victory, I guess, on the way to Raw. And I will say the match was great, of course. McDonough also was able to, I guess for the most part, nimbly adjust on his finisher at the end when Dragon Lee tried to jump a little too early, and so he kicked him back in the knee to get him down to set him up for the double inside. So that was a sometimes those botches go worse and then they don't recover as well. But that was, you know, as expected with these two, I honestly expected him to pick him up one more time and try for another just to put more emphasis on it. But so this match was basically the setup for Dragon Lee versus Noam Dar, and that was set up, or that was began, I think, last week when Dar sat in on a match at the commentary table. So did McDonough ever win the Heritage Cup over in UK?
I don't think so. I know that Mark Coffey did and A-Kid did. And I don't think so.
And Tyler Bate, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I remember saying it was pretty cheeky how Noam Dar was holding the trophy up while he was talking to Gallus, and Mark Coffey's plate was right there or something like that. So you're right about having a reason to fight, because so far we've just had Dragon Lee in dope matches, which is, you know, it works fine for AEW. But I think what you were saying about him needing a reason to fight makes sense, because now there's something behind this more than so just I'm going to be the best in the match or something like that, right? And for Dragon Lee coming out of this, I feel like, as Nate was saying, with Noam Dar, he needs to win this feud. And Dar is one of those who can take losses and talk his way out of it. And we've known that his whole career. I think what this will do, though, is give Dar a very good opponent to reintroduce himself to the stateside viewers who only know him as the guy who would say Alicia Fox all the time, you know. And so he's good in the ring. He's really good. And with Dragon Lee, I hope that you're the one who has to cover the match, because I don't want to have to type out the pace of what they're going to do. Eventually, I'm going to get that roadblock when it does happen. So, or not roadblock, I'm calling it roadblock again. Battleground?
Battleground.
God, so many of these rehash things. Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. Good for my son. One of my sons.
You know, the toughest guys for me to recap, Dragon Lee's tough because he's fast. The toughest ones are Zack Sabre Jr. and Timothy Thatcher, because they're just making up moves in the ring. They're like, yeah, nobody's ever done this. What you going to call this? Just looking into the screen, mocking me, calling me out by name. It happens all the time, folks. Zack Sabre Jr. being like, yeah, Spooky Milk, what you going to do? Yeah, he calls me Spooky Milk. Okay, so I'm off the deep end. So let's go to the phone lines. We got 914. This might be Brad, but if it's not Brad, he can tell me he's not Brad. So 914, if you can hear us, go ahead and say hey.
It is Brad. Hey, guys, how you doing? Who am I on with? It's Kelly, Bruce. I'm so sorry.
And
Nate. You
and
filled
Nate.
In for me
My
last
bad.
Week.
Yeah,
okay.
I did, man. I wanted to help you write that PowerShell script too, Nate. I really did, but I guess you figured it out. I did.
I got guys, email migration went great. It's all good.
Awesome, man. Awesome job. I don't understand. Maybe you guys can shed some light on Fire and Isla Dawn bringing those tag team championships up to SmackDown, which Vic Joseph obviously was making it a point to say a few times. Why not? I mean, is it to give them instant credibility or something like that? Like, hey, these are winners. These are people you should pay attention to. And if not, why not have Indy? I understand she's injured, so probably not the best idea. But if she wasn't injured, do you think they would have allowed Indy to bring up that NXT women's title to Raw? Maybe, you know, just cut a quick promo, like, I'm going to defend this back on NXT until I lose it, but I'm here, blah, blah, blah. Because I think if you want to give someone instant credibility, like, what a better way to do it? Like, I think of, you know, we saw Bron Breakker with the NXT championship on Raw one time last year. We saw Solo Sikoa with the North American championship when he first came up from NXT, or, you know, a week or two in, whatever it was, after he did the thing with Drew McIntyre and Roman. But I'm just curious, like, why is that happening, and what do you think becomes of it?
So in watching NXT since the beginning and knowing kind of the way things were done in the back, I know at the very beginning it was really tough for Dusty and for Triple H, Dusty Rhodes and Triple H, because they would have championships on people they believed in. And because Vince would see the same thing that they would, he would ask for wrestlers, and it didn't matter if they were champions. So they kind of found themselves out champions kind of often. They were vacating, I think, the first two women. No, the first woman had to vacate. That was Paige. And then Charlotte was called up, and she lost a match that we knew she'd lose. So they've had to get creative in a lot of different ways. And the way this went down with all of the women champion being called up, it gave me the impression that they have gone back to, they don't necessarily need to tell these guys who they want to call up. They're just going to do it. I feel like you owe Shawn Michaels a little bit of a heads up in what to do. As far as one of them vacating and then one of them winning their match, I feel like that, so there's a little bit of difference in what they do. I think that Indy was going to, given that she was called up, I think that she was going to do this regardless. But I wonder if they ever would have taken the championship off Roxanne Perez if they had known that Indy was going to be called up to the main roster so quickly. I've got to think that there's no reason to make Indy the champion unless you really just want to be able to say you were here longer than almost anybody and call it a token run if you want to, but we want to give you a token run. So I think it's very interesting what happened in that situation, but unless I am told otherwise explicitly, I'm going to assume that that this was kind of a surprise for her to be called up. And I hadn't thought it, but Bruce's idea that the call-up may have been in reaction to the injury, so you can kind of move her up and get her storylines started with the way or whatever she's going to do with Index on the main roster, and you don't need to have her in the ring for that, and that's fine. As far as the women's tag team championship, I will tell you this. It's given me a really, really good reason to be intrigued in what those women do, not only on NXT from here on out, although they've said this is their last time they're going to show up, but also with what they do on the main roster. So I think the best reason to have those championships be on that show when guys like Solo Sikoa show up and have those championships on the main roster. It's to remind people of NXT and be like, there's a whole vibrant world happening there with championships, and this is what you're missing. I mean, you're missing Solo Sikoa, and they bring him up, and everybody realizes, oh, this guy's cool as hell. Now, you don't get the same level of that with Fire and Dawn, but I think that that's an act that people will probably latch onto on a large scale, but we'll see, because fans are fickle. Bruce, what do you think?
Yeah, and, you know, of course, the biggest example of this is Kevin Owens showing up on Raw for the Open Challenge with John Cena carrying the Men's NXT Championship. So I think with Indy, a lot of those graphics would say former this, former that, but having the title on you, I think, does give a sense of legitimacy even more so than just listing it there on the graphic, because it's that immediate, oh, they're the champion right now. There's something about them I should be paying attention to. And for both of them, I think that was more the intention. Now, with Dawn and Fire and the tag team title, I think the issue is, even if you go back to my scenario earlier of having a mystery team from NXT join, is like, it's just who? After Henley and James broke up, there's no really other women's tag team left that you can, and you know, Nia and Paxley broke up too, so there's not really a women's tag team left in NXT for you to kind of have the titles passed off to. And maybe what they're doing now is introducing people like Danny Palmer, and giving people like that more time on TV so that they can have more depth in that tag team division, because all 11 or 12 of those women that were out there tonight aren't going to be, you know, at the top of the singles card. Now, that may be why with either of them winning, you would have them on, you know, on Raw or SmackDown with the title. I think the Joseph being more despondent was because Fire and Dawn, now that I think about it, as you said, Fire and Dawn said it was their last time on NXT. But again, without the depth there really was no interest for me within the Women's Tag Team Championship and the women's and the Tag Team Division. Now if they're floating, or if they even unify that, then you have a much deeper Tag Team Division, especially if you do end up drawing from NXT as well. It's just, regardless of which Women's Tag Team Championship you're discussing, they've really never been booked well, never been given too much emphasis. I think the best time was probably the pandemic, when you had, you know, Sasha and Bayley, you had Asuka and Kairi, you had Asuka and Charlotte. And so it's just kind of been a muddled mess since then. Like, again, it could be Morgan and Rodriguez right now, but or Gonzalez, but I'm just taking a guess there. I don't know if they're still champion or not.
They are.
Okay. You know, so even just contemplating who's champion right now probably is a signal of just, not pathetic, but how subpar that division has been and has been booked. And it's not because the women in the tag team division don't try and they don't want to be champion. It's just that division has never been. You know, the men's tag team division up until recently, really, the last 7 years or so, never really cared that much about it, because WWE never cared too much about it. But then you get people like the New Day. Then you get the Usos. In NXT, we had the Revival, American Alpha, AOP, DIY. I mean, I don't think that, you know, I don't think there's, I think there's a correlation between the emphasis that was put on tag teams within NXT and then seeing that translate into how tag teams are booked on Raw and SmackDown with some of the better acts. And I just hope to see that now with Women's Division. But even since Triple H took over, the one big critique that people have had of him is his booking up the women's division, the women's tag team division. So for me, I feel like this was the best scenario or the best outcome of a bunch of detrimental scenarios for the tag team division, the women's tag team division, and they're just going to have to make do with this and go from there.
All right, Brad, go ahead.
Thanks, guys. You know, speaking of, I guess, send-offs, you know, they had a really nice, I thought, you know, send-off for, what's her name, Kaden Hanna. They had a nice send-off, I thought, even for Isla Dawn and, you know, and Alba Fyre, just acknowledging them, all four of them with the last match, and JD McDonagh, obviously. I was surprised there was no send-off for Grayson Waller, even just a quick promo or something, unless I missed something, which I don't think I did. I was surprised with what a major part he was of, you know, of just the crowd and everyone being, you know, either booing or loving or hating him, whatever, that there wasn't like, you know, I'm NXT and, you know, I deserve this, whatever. I don't know, just some sort of call up. Were you guys at all surprised that he didn't get a, and obviously Indy got a send off too. I'm sorry. That was the other person I was thinking of, but are you guys surprised Grayson didn't get a send off in the show?
And Apollo kind of got one too, but it was more to give the rub to Trick Williams, which I thought was a nice scene as well that didn't need to be, but I thought it was nice. I am, in retrospect, not surprised that Waller didn't get one, and it's only because of the role he plays. He was going to get cheered regardless of the role he played because fans are going to respect the work, and I don't think they want to, like, it's kayfabe is dead. It doesn't matter that much, but he is a guy they're going to lean on to be a super heel and probably one of those heels that never really turns babyface. And if he does, it won't work and they'll turn him back and they'll say, we're sorry, Miz, that whole thing didn't work.
Here's a token title run. Grand Slam championship.
Right. I think it's just because of the role he plays, and I don't know that you'd want him in a position to get cheered for any reason ahead of his time as – because he'll debut with a bang. Some of these will debut with a whimper, and that will make me very sad, but I think that he is one that's going to debut with a bang. Bruce.
Yeah.
I'm here too, you know.
I threw to you last time, didn't I?
No.
No.
Like, didn't throw to you, period?
Well, no.
Not on the tag team question that we just had. No.
Yeah. Snap. I didn't throw to you because I thought I already had. Nate, go ahead and take that instead of Bruce.
All right. So I just threw myself off. What the hell was the question? My God, I've been awake since 4 o'clock this morning. I apologize.
So glad that you called that to my attention.
Right? For that.
Yes, indeed. And now you threw me.
now you threw me too.
It was just on the lack of send-off for Grayson Waller.
Oh, Grayson Waller. Okay, and I actually – okay, and I even have a theory for this too. Okay, cool. So my theory is he's no longer Shawn Michaels' problem. Shawn Michaels, I'm not giving him a send-off. No. You're going bye-bye. You're Adam Pearce's problem now.
Who said kayfabe is dead?
What's that?
Who said kayfabe is dead?
Right? Exactly. I'm explaining it like I'm Regal. That's what I got. That's what I got. Right. Other than that, I everything that you said, Kelly, I pretty much reiterate.
Yeah, Kelly, you basically said what I was going to say is just his character is one where getting that kind of a send-off makes me even for McDonough, it was a bit odd, but I have to give credit to McDonough because he kept that stone face and like he didn't even care that the crowd was giving him a send-off. So it all comes down to the character that Waller is. He's going to show up Raw after Backlash and just talk it up and make the crowd instantly hate him, and that's exactly what he's supposed to do.
Go ahead, Dave, if you got more.
Oh, you mean Brad?
Brad.
Dave!
It's all right.
I work with a Dave. Oh, my God.
It's all good, guys.
This show.
The last thing, I got to be honest with you, though. I was sitting here with my 9-year-old daughter watching the Indy Hartwell thing, and when she said, don't be sad because it's over, or don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened, like, I actually started, like, tearing up. I didn't cry, but, like, I really legitimately – you can think I'm soft if you want, but I literally started almost crying. Like, that was, like, really, really nice. And I just hope she does – you know, she does get some sort of recognition on the main roster. I don't think so as much with Dexter Lumis and Gargano and Candice. But, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. But my other question, just bringing back what Bruce said about lack of tag teams – and watching that match tonight with J.C. Jane and Gigi Dolan, honestly, they never should have split them up. I understand splitting them up for a little bit, but now is the time, if never, to get them back together, I think, or soon. And it's been so vicious. I don't even know if you can do that at this point or anytime soon, but they were legitimately like going to be a great women's tag team. And I feel like they're stronger together than apart. And I don't feel like this has drawn much of anything, the feud between the two of them. And it just seems to never end anyway. I mean, I feel like they should have kept them together, and I wish they would get them back together. I guess my question is, do you think that they are going to get Toxic Attraction back together at some point? Because I really feel like that's needed, and I feel like it would be the smarter move for both of their careers, even getting called up maybe a year from now, to have them together as one, especially with the lack of tag teams like Bruce just brought up.
You know, what's extra weird about it is it seemed like they were testing the waters for a main roster run for Toxic Attraction a handful of months ago. Like, they were being promoted on the show. They showed up on Raw or SmackDown. It is odd. I think that apart, Gigi can be okay, and I'm not so sure about JC. JC can play a heel. I wish she could play a professional wrestler, but she's pretty rough. And in their first match they had together, JC just had one of the worst out and out performances I can remember. But Gigi came off way better than JC, but she's also not doing her best work when she's against JC. I don't know what it is, but when these two get in the ring against each other, they have no chemistry. And it's so crazy because they have so much chemistry as a team. I don't know how that transitive property isn't working out when they are against each other in the ring. I also wonder if this match today, 3 minutes and 21 seconds, did they finish this quickly because JC was bleeding gallons out there? It felt like between the way that they ended the match, they had to acknowledge the blood, even though they don't like to do that on commentary. And then they threw to hype for the next match and then a commercial relatively abruptly, I thought. It really seemed like something maybe got lost here. If that means we got three more minutes of Dragon Lee and JD, then, you know, that's great. But it sure seems like these two were supposed to go a little longer. I, as you said, lack of women's tag teams feels like these two could have been useful as a tag team. And I think that JC will flounder a lot. But I think they thought, okay, we're seeing something really potentially special with JC, at least as a heel. And we're seeing that Gigi can work face and Gigi can really work. And now they've taken them apart and they do seem like kind of like less than the sum of their parts. It's been really tough to watch, and Gigi's done her best stuff away from JC, and JC, they're not even trusting to do other stuff away from Gigi. So it really does seem like it's hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube, but maybe they should think about trying. Nate?
Now I'm just trying to figure out how the hell you're supposed to put toothpaste back in a tube. I can't agree with you guys more. JC and Gigi, like, I want to like them as singles acts. I really do. I really enjoyed them as Toxic Attraction. You know, they certainly weren't the best tag team in the world. And, you know, we had our gripes about them and whatnot. But I think that there was something, I don't want to say something special there, but there was something there with Toxic Attraction. I think they could have had a pretty good run on the main roster as you know, a heel duo. I think they probably would have had a better run if Mandy Rose was still with them on the main roster, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. And not because I think Mandy Rose is deserving of that run. I just think that WWE thinks that Mandy Rose would be deserving of that run. But Their singles run so far has been very lackluster. Like you said, Kelly, they just have no chemistry in the ring. It's crazy because, you know, like they've obviously spent so much time together and I'm sure they probably practice together or things like that. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. Like, you know, you hear wrestlers talk, sometimes you just don't have chemistry with the guy or girl in this case. So it, you know, it is, it, I guess it kind of is what it is there. So with that, I hope they kind of get away from this feud sooner rather than later. I know they've spent so much time investing in it. But because of the fact that they don't really have that chemistry there, I'm hoping that they get away from it and they kind of allow the two of them to flourish, or at least try to flourish on their own, you know, in some other story. And then, you know, do something. I mean, you know, I don't think anybody can ever recreate the Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, you know, love-hate relationship, but you could always do something like that, you know, where, you know, somewhere down the line, you know, JC needs help, and maybe she goes and turns to her old friend Gigi, and Gigi being the face is like, all right, you know what, I'm going to help you out for old time's sake, but, you know, and then eventually we get the reuniting of Toxic Attraction or something like that. So you can certainly do it down the line, but I don't think they could do it anytime soon, you know, at least not for, I wouldn't want to see it for a few years. You know, WWE, I'm sure they'd probably pull it up, you know, and make 6 months to a year or something like that and pretend it's a really long time. But I think it really should be, you know, at least a year and a half, two, even 3 years. As far as the blood stopping the match tonight, I think that is what happened. It seemed like the match to me ended up very abruptly after I noticed the blood. And it's funny because at first I thought it was a blood capsule. I actually went back, and it was before the shot of like the blood just like pouring down her face. I think she was like kneeling over Gigi, if I'm not mistaken. It might have even been right after the pinfall. But it was right before that. I hadn't seen that yet, so I rewound it. I thought it was a blood capsule at first, and then I'm like, oh no, that's not a blood capsule whatsoever. I think it did add a little bit to the moment and make JC look a little bit more like a badass. But, you know, it, kind of happy accident there. Nothing like the Becky Lynch getting punched in the face moment, but nothing compared to that. But I think it did help enhance. You know, I'm not a huge fan of like, you know, blading and blood and wrestling and all of that, especially in today's day and age. But if it's going to happen and it enhances the story, why not? It's fine.
Bruce.
So I'll touch on the blood first, and then a point that hasn't been brought up yet. But when it comes to the blood and the ending, I want to disagree a little bit just because they still had the post-match angle. They didn't just go straight to the next segment. So I want to say that the blood might not have had anything to do with it. Their first match was also only a couple minutes long. And maybe that's all they can get together with, because, again, just like we said last week with Cora Jade and Lyra Valkyria, they just have no chemistry when they're facing each other. So I want to say, because of the beatdown that happened afterward and how they still lingered on Jane after that, the bleeding might not have had as much to do with the ending as you two are making it out. But I could be wrong. So to the point that hasn't been brought up yet, and I think it's the biggest sin of this match tonight, the hell is her brother doing there if he's not even going to do anything, or if they're not even going to really focus on anything? So, yeah, he kind of had a pouty face when Jane was beating on him, but and then Dolan kind of, you know, greeted him when she made her entrance, but the hell are you even going to have him and hype him up being there so much and then not do anything? This is why, look,
that's another reason I thought that maybe it ended soon. But so I'm coaching him, saying, hey, now it's important in acting that you never try to look like you've been a human before. I don't know if it was teaching him. It was horrendous.
Yes. Well, I mean, I was going to say that could be a reason why the blood was a reason they ended the match early. But again, having the beatdown right there happening after that makes me believe that that was still planned. And I think this is just one of those cues that isn't working in the ring. It's working in terms of the promos and the build, mm-hmm. but once it gets to the actual, you know, the storytelling aspect in the ring, which is the main crux of professional wrestling, it's just not working, unfortunately. So should they have been broken up? No. I think the situation with Mandy Rose led to their demise quicker than would have been anticipated. When Kelly brought up, they had it, you know, they were kind of testing them for on SmackDown. They were part of that tournament until one of them got hurt, and you know, so hindsight, maybe they should have kept them together, but if they really wanted to try and see that Judy Dolan face run, I think they're seeing that she has what it takes to get the crowd behind her. This just might not be the right opponent for her to show that she can get that kind of reaction in the ring.
Yeah, Gigi needs to get away from JC, but if she does, what happens to JC?
Exactly. What Nate was bringing up, kind of the goal, the KO, Sammy thinking, is JC ever going to get to a point where she's in other feuds, where they feel comfortable enough to leave her in other feuds, or is she going to be, you know, a tag team wrestler for the rest of her life, or is she not too much longer for the company? I think it's rough to say, but there just doesn't seem to have been, at least when she's in the ring with Dolan, there just doesn't seem to be much improvement in the ring.
Well, the world needs a Marty Jannetty. Yeah, he at least he didn't go up.
Do they really, though?
They don't.
I mean, outside the ring, no.
He is out there, folks. Brad, if you got any more.
Yeah, that's it for me. But I am surprised that you guys are so down on JC, because when I've seen her cut promos, I think she is very animated.
It's the in-ring stuff.
I love her promos.
Yeah.
Her character is fine, just like Gigi. It's all the in-ring stuff.
Yeah, and I agree with that as well.
But I feel like personality is a big part. Obviously, you guys do too, but I don't think her in-ring is so bad where it can improve over the next 12 months. I just think right now she's locked in this feud where they have absolutely no chemistry. She wrestles no one else. She doesn't do anything else. And that's, I think, the problem. And she's been totally marginalized and cut out of everything other than Gigi Dolan. And that's all it is. And same thing for Gigi Dolan. All it is JC Jane. And it just sucks. It just sucks for both of them. Honestly, Gigi to me looked like tonight she was wrestling at like half speed or 0.8.
I wrote that exact thing. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So she just looked like everything's like slow motion-y or something, but you guys are the best. I'll listen to the rest and just love listening to you guys. Thank you so much for the generosity with the time and having me on.
Absolutely. Love having you on. I wrote the same thing about the match and noticed the same thing you did with Gigi. There was specifically a lariat, allegedly, that she threw. That was very, very slow. Like I don't want to hurt Gigi. Little did she know, in about 80 seconds time, Gigi was going to bust her face open in a very, very enormous way. Maybe they're too close of friends to work against each other. Who knows? But I will say only.
I don't know. I'd hit my friends harder.
There you go.
They're not Triple H
and
Shawn Michaels, is what he's saying.
Right.
Yeah.
That JC, I think she really is that bad. I really think that she's that bad in the ring, and I fear that the reason that she's not getting other opponents is because they got to do stuff with her, with Gigi, because that feud's going on, but she's not necessarily up to having other singles opponents. And maybe she's just a born tag team wrestler, because I never thought she was that good, but I thought she was a fine tag team wrestling component. And now it's put up or shut up. And I want her to get better so badly. I want it so badly, because that can be an awesome act if she does. Okay. Let's go to another women's match. Dani Palmer making her debut against Tatum Paxley. This went 3:55. Dani Palmer, of course, wins this one. You know, Tatum has shown so much improvement in the ring herself. It's unfortunate that now she's just the step over. And maybe she will get a chance not to be. But once you've been in that spot for a long time, it is real hard to step out of it sometimes. I thought Dani looked pretty decent. Definitely very athletic, very gymnastic. She's... girl can move. So when the stuff gets really smooth, when she has a lot of reps, I think she can be something special in there. Having too many Sol Rukas is a good problem to have. But right now they have the exact number of Sol Rukas that they need, because the actual Sol Ruka is injured. So, I thought that this was a positive debut for Dani Palmer. She had a little moment earlier on with Tank, Hank, and Oba. Tank, Hank, and Oba. That's going to be fun to say. I hope. Oh, yeah, and Sol, who showed up via video conferencing, as we very old people say.
I was just going to say, how old are you?
So via smoke signal, she had some stuff to say. So Danny Palmer over Tatum Paxley, 355. Bruce.
Yeah, I was going to make a different comparison based strictly on the gymnastics and it's Tiffany Stratton's very early matches and how she really relied on that. And, you know, I kept saying, if use your base and make sure that you get that down, use your basic as the basics down and then work from there. And I think Stratton, Ruka, and Danny Palmer are examples of doing just that with sort of the gymnastics and acrobatic background. Coming out of the breakout tournament, aside from Perez, I said Henley and Paxley are the ones to look out for. James was the dark horse that I didn't see coming, and her improvement has been great. But Paxley, I just loved seeing her gradual improvement. And I'm still holding out hope that my prediction is right in that she's the one who's been attacking people in the parking lot. And again, if she was the one that went and attacked Nikita Lyons, and Tatum Paxley's an instant face. So my hope is that she's still the one. And they did allude to the injuries and the attacks happening to the women's division within NXT. So who knows who is going to be in the long run, but I'm still going to say it's Tatum Paxley just because I'm vain and I want to be right. So aside from that, I think Tank and Hank, which I said last week, their tag team name is going to come. They showed, again, a lot of charisma and a personality. And then when Oba Femi came in, or as Booker T said last week, Oba Fema, he showed a different kind of charisma, the quiet, intimidating, stoic charisma.
That was me that said that, not Booker T.
No, Booker T said it on the show last week.
Oh,
I wrote it in my report. Yes,
oh,
I wrote it in my report because I caught that. And I think I'm a bit higher on Oba Femi than some. Like, I heard Todd Martin kind of not be as high on him last week on the Fix, but I think Femi's going to do just fine. What they're doing here is I like how they're keeping – because let's remember that Tank, Femi, the Ledger, Femi, and Palmer were all hyped with the same video hype on NXT saying they're coming soon. So I like the fact that they're kind of keeping these three tangled, but within the periphery of each other because of their connection as the first kind of NIL class to come up and be introduced, I believe NIL class, to be introduced on NXT TV. So that little macro booking aside, I think, you know, a great showcase for Palmer. Tatum Paxley, if she's going to be a fall person, that's still going to make her a lot of money when she moves up to Raw SmackDown because she has the skills to, you know, to do that and be better. And, you know, you always need good enhancement talent. So hopefully she does more because I see more potential in her than just that. But good showing for both women. And I think, again, having those three on the periphery of each other's kind of matches and career goings is a good booking decision in terms of the long term, these three.
Nate?
Yeah, I agree. Like Hank and Tank, I think, have amazing chemistry together. They almost remind me of Heavy Machinery, kind of, sort of. Not exactly, but like I get Heavy Machinery vibes from them. Which is certainly a good thing. Like I'm talking like old Heavy Machinery, having fun. And then, you know, Oba Fema, I just did it again. Oba Fema, Oba Femi, he's, like, I agree with Bruce. I think he's going to be fine. He's, you know, a little bit rough, but, you know, I think with the look and, you know, what he can deliver, you know, he should be just fine, you know, long-term. The women's match here with Tatum Paxley and Danny Palmer, I'm actually pretty impressed, you know, with Danny Palmer as well. You know, I think her and Sol Ruka, once Sol Ruka gets back, you know, putting them together as a tag team is probably inevitable, especially with, you know, just how much they're hyping up the fact that they're friends. And I think it's a great idea. They're going to be able to play very well off of one another. They're both incredibly athletic. I really liked what I saw to Danny Palmer tonight. So, I'm hoping that that's kind of the case when Sol Ruka comes back. you know, maybe even get an NXT, you know, tag title championship run if the NXT women's tag titles are still a thing and they don't wind up merging them with the WWE tag titles. You know, and then eventually have them split off and go singles, I think probably be the right move for them. I don't know if, you know, somebody goes heel or whatever, it's kind of too early for me to tell who would probably be that person. But I think that's probably the direction we'll see is, you know, see them get a tag team run together. And Tatum Paxley. I agree with you guys 100%. I really would like to see her doing a little bit more than what she's doing now. Bruce, if you're right and she's the one behind the attacks, like, I'm all for it, and like, bow down to you for calling that one. That would have been an amazing call. But I'm all for it if that is the case. You know, I think her progression in the ring from her debut to what we saw tonight against Danny Palmer is huge. So definitely for it, and hoping they do a little bit more with Paxley down the line.
Let me do a little bit of cleanup on Danny Palmer. She signed through the 2022 WrestleMania tryout. But Femi and Tank, they are the next in liners. She just ended up getting in at the same time. But yeah, they get a lot of recruits from a lot of places. So, I don't know. Let's write them down or some such, because we are getting old, folks, as I opened the show to tell you. Okay. So, feels weird to bury an unmasking this far down in the show, but it was just Reginald, Axiom versus Scripps. 4:15, Axiom defeats Scripps after a very spirited affair, as you would expect. Scripps doing a just wild flip off of the announce table and onto Axiom that did get a holy shit chant. That was good stuff. After the match, Axiom goes for the handshake. I was in the middle of writing, what did Scripps gain from any of this, from this turn, from any of this? And then this moment starts to happen. I'm like, I better stop typing, because they're going to do the moment that gets him something out of this. Well, we hope. Axiom goes in for the handshake, and Scripps hits him, and Axiom hits back and yanks off that horrible, horrible mask. And of course it is Reginald. The fans immediately chant Reggie. Everyone knew, but now he's right there in front of them. And Booker T plays it off. He's like, you know who that is, you know who that is. But they didn't have him say the name, which suggests that maybe they're not committed to calling him Reginald again, in whatever iteration they go with him from here on out. Nate.
I have no idea what the hell to make of this. Like, you know, the whole Scripps thing, and I think we even have an email on this too, on Scripps. It seemed like such a cool character when we first saw the debut. I'm an IT guy. I'm a nerd, you know. So like Solomon Crow and like that whole kind of hacker gimmick that he had back in the day, right? I kind of liked that until it went all weird and crazy
was only cool until he debuted on
until
the show.
He debuted exactly.
Tom and
exactly.
I are talking
the
about
the 8YV episode out. of his debut was made me laugh so hard.
Yeah, like, you know, I love the idea of the gimmick. So, you know, and then, you know, we saw, you know, Mustafa Ali, you know, potentially be, you know, the SmackDown hacker, and that wound up turning into I was going to say Judgment Day.
Retribution.
Thank you. Wound up turning into Retribution. So, you know, I was kind of like, all right, let's see what goes on with this whole Scripps thing. And then kind of like Solomon Crow, the bell rang, or at least, you know, he debuted. I haven't liked this from the get-go. Matter of fact, in the hits and misses tonight, even though this is Axiom in the ring, and like you said, you know, there was some good action here. Scripps, you know, pulled off some, you know, that flip was amazing. Axiom had some awesome offense here tonight too. But one of the things I wrote in the hits and misses is, if, you know, a couple wrestlers have a good match and nobody cares, does it even matter?
Ask Tony Khan.
You know, fair point. I don't know. So, you know, with the unmasking towards the end, I'm kind of glad they did it because I feel like that Strip's character just needed some sort of a merciful killing. I don't know what – I feel like there's a plan here to kind of explain the horrible debut and, you know, like the fact that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Strip's jumps from outside the ring to attack Axiom and then just gets super kicked in the face. And, you know, there's got to be something to explain that. They can't just – present it that way and then have him get unmasked and then present him as a different character. I mean, I guess they could. They did that with Emelina, right? But I feel like there's something that they're going to show us we haven't seen yet. So I'm going to kind of give it a couple more weeks. But as it stands right now, I could not care. I could not care any less about Scripps or Reginald being on the show. It just does not matter to me the way they're presenting it right now.
Bruce, get in there and save Reginald.
Sorry, it sounded like Nate kept saying Strips, and I was over here silently laughing each time he said it. So,
well, that would be a new gimmick.
Hello, ladies.
I'm Al Venus, and so good match again. my biggest thing was just at the end when Vic. Or when Scripps was unmasked, Vic was like, "Oh, he's been unmasked. We know the identity." I'm like, "Dog, who are you trying to fool right now? Come on, man. At least act like you have some decency."
Vic, how dumb are you?
What was that?
I'm like, Vic, how dumb are you?
Yeah, no, exactly. And
he's pretty dumb.
I mean,
he really is.
He is with Mackenzie Mitchell, so he has some smarts in him. So
what? Wait, seriously?
I
like her so much until right now.
Isn't Vic with Mackenzie? Isn't that the long running thing?
I gotta Google that shit because
I'm pretty sure it's
not
a long running thing.
I need to die.
The best thing on NXT TV, and then yeah. So,
Yeah, they're married. They're married.
I told you.
Damn.
Kelly's gonna have a nice drink after this. So the match itself was good. My thing is I feel that Axiom's momentum has been stunted a bit because he's been stuck with Scripts. The sort of the promos and everything leading up to the match, again, they were cool, but it's still Scripts, and he literally has done nothing to make himself seem like a viable contender for us to even take him as a serious threat to beat Axiom. Now, he got a good amount of offense, sure, but I mean, Axiom's only been losing to the best of the best in NXT, and a lot of those times it's been multi-person matches. So I just hope that from here, Axiom moves and he's either, you know, going after Carmelo Hayes, he's going after Wes Lee. Like, the North American champion has kind of been his golden goose or golden egg or whatever. So going back to that maybe is a good thing for him to do after this whole thing with Gulak and Wes Lee is over with. Scripts isn't in my purview right now. It's Axiom because there's so much there with him. And again, it's one of those things where we said it's so weird that putting a mask on him made him more charismatic than having no mask on a kid. So that's where I'm at with this. And I guess we're going to see some kind of character change for Scripts to Reggie or Reginald or I don't know, Regina George, whatever we're going to name him, because Scripts just wasn't working, and maybe a change will do to him what it did for Axiom, but I honestly don't have too much hope because what I've seen from Scripts in the ring is that he's still using a lot of the Cirque du Soleil stuff, but I haven't seen much of the basics being improved upon.
There isn't enough Templeton rye whiskey in the world for me to deal with the fact that Vic is a success.
Married.
That he's happy. Like, it...
Maybe that's why he doesn't care if his commentary is good on Tuesday nights.
You know, Mason Ryan is in Cirque du Soleil now. Did you know
really?
That?
No. I
that is that. Where that guy went.
Because of 8YB is how I know that.
Yeah, well, thank you. I wondered if you'd get that because we certainly have mentioned it there. Because, yes, happy for his success and happy that it wasn't in wrestling because that wasn't good. Okay, so we open with Wesley versus Drew Gulak. It was good. Of course it was. 5 minutes and 22 seconds. That's pretty short for an opener. And I think maybe this multi-person feud is over, but we might be heading to Tyler Bate, getting into it more with Charlie Dempsey. I think we might be getting to Tyler Bate versus Wes Lee, if not in a feud sense, at least in a respect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bruce, go ahead.
No, you took the words right out of my mouth. We're heading towards a Tyler Bate and Wes Lee North American Championship match, probably at Battleground. And I think that's probably where Wes Lee will lose it if Tyler Bate is indeed his opponent. I think that, again, I've been talking about the lineage of this championship so much, but you go from people like Carmelo Hayes to Wes Lee and how they embody the title. I think Tyler Bate is right in that mold. And, you know, let's get the white boy something. So I think Tyler Bate will be the one to take the title off Wes Lee if they do indeed book that match for Battleground.
Nate?
God, I hope they book that match for Battleground because I'm going to be there. I definitely think that's the way they're going as well. I mean, Tyler Bate and Wes Lee right now, obviously they're, you know, coexisting together, and Tyler Bate was in, you know, Lee's corner here tonight. But that kind of is the way that it feels like it's going for me too. You know, I think, Charlie Dempsey is basically just going to be a bit of a stop for Tyler Bate before there's, you know, some sort of a respect level feud, which, you know, you guys, as you guys mentioned, between Lee and Bate.
They might even go a tag team match with these two, with these four, and then use that as the catalyst for Bate and Wes Lee having a match together.
Yep. Yeah. Something like that, you know, and no matter how they get there, I'm just hoping they get there. You know, obviously face-to-face matches, they're tough to do, but I know that Lee and Bate be able to pull it off. And I think the crowd, you know, not just in Lowell, if they do it in Battleground, you know, not just the crowd here in Lowell. Lowell is a wrestling city too. So it's like, there's always massive responses in the Songs Arena or, you know, at any of the smaller indie venues, you know, around this area. So I think they would get a massive response at Battleground if they were to do that.
And I know crowds don't care about heel face. They care about who they like.
Exactly. So yeah, I'm all for that. All for it.
Coffee versus Gacy. This one had something on the line. Loser doesn't get to be named Joe anymore. Joe Coffey and Joe Gacy. Gacy was fighting for the chance for two guys that have announced publicly that they are leaving the company to have a tag team championship match.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course he won. And you know, it's in a macro sense, we all are wondering, is this in the hopes of trying to keep them? Because they realize, oh, yeah, remember when they were so awesome that we put Zach Gibson over in the NXT UK tournament? Like, they had him win a 16-man tournament because they knew he was an awesome heel. They had these guys as an awesome heel tag team over there because they knew how good they were. And then they jobbed him out here to teams that, sorry, are lesser, and now they are the dyad. I don't blame them, but I still selfishly want to keep them around unless they go anywhere else besides New Japan. I would be down with that because I will be watching more of their matches in New Japan than I do now. So, anyway, Gacy wins in 321, the second match to be 321 on the night. So there you go. 44 minutes of 20 and 25 seconds of wrestling on this show. More a storyline than a match. They did have the segment beforehand where Ava Raine said, now after you do this for them, you do something for you. Also, I was glad that like two or three different wrestlers broke out of Uranagi on The Rock's birthday.
Yeah, so I think that backstage segment clearly indicates that Joe Gacy is not the leader of schism. It's Ava. She's the one telling him what to do, and he's agreeing. Now, what that means for him in terms of doing something for himself, he could enter a North American Championship Challenge. He could go after Carmelo Hayes. He could recruit somebody. Who knows if that's what he wants to do. So there are different ways that can go with Gaethje. I'd prefer with him going with the recruiting aspect because then he wouldn't be in any matches I would have to watch. So that would be my personal preference. Now, when it comes to the dyad, I was going to say GYV, let's also remember that they put on what is still my favorite triple threat tag team match with Gallus and what do they call themselves? Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster. What was their name?
Oh, the Wales thing.
People know what I'm talking about. But that triple threat tag team match.
Oh, that was unbelievable.
The best triple threat tag team match I think I'll ever see. One of the best triple threat matches you will ever see, made better by the fact that I did not have to cover it. But, you know, they do so well. And, again, James Drake's, can't believe I called him that, Jagger Reed's just ability on the mic since becoming a part of Schism has been just a revelation, because we would just complain so much about him pantomiming the words with Zach Gibson just standing right next to him when they were GYV. So to see this out of him has been just great. One thing that we should also, they've also haven't looked like they're phoning anything in terms of promos or matches. So that's professionalism. They're doing all that. Now, the one thing we didn't talk about is Ivy Nile at the end of the match getting frustrated and saying she can't keep getting away with things. So I think we're either heading to Ava's first singles match with Ivy Nile, or a mixed tag team match with one of the Creed brothers and Nile versus Gaethje and Ava. So keep an eye on that. And if Ava's first match is with Ivy Nile, I'm going to be okay with that, because Nile is someone who can make it look like she's stretching her without making it look like she's stretching her. Or, you know what I'm trying to say, without actually stretching her. And I think in terms of someone you have a first match with, she's exactly at the level, both in terms of the booking and her in-ring ability, where you can have Ava go over and be confident that the match isn't going to be like, you know, Electra Lopez versus BFAP or Jane versus Dolan. So I'm keeping an eye on that moving forward, because I think the singles match is probably the lesser possibility of the two, but they're definitely heading towards some kind of encounter with Nile and Ava.
South Wales subculture.
That's what it was called.
That's, yeah.
I thought Wales was involved, but I wasn't sure. But I grew from there. Nate.
So Joe Gacy, dyad. I just want Grizzled Young Vets back. I'm not going to lie. I got to admit, you know, what Bruce was just bringing up about, you know, Jagger Reed's mic ability, I feel like is the only, like, benefit, the only plus side to, you know, them becoming the dyad. You know, we kind of got to see his chops on the mic. And, yeah, I always just figured they never had him talk because he couldn't talk, you know, or, you know, not like that he was like a, you know, a mute or anything like that, but, you know, he just didn't have mic ability or something, but, you know, he's proven otherwise. So I feel like that is probably the biggest plus, coming out of, you know, this faction, for them. I don't know. I'd love to see them either return to, you know, being the Grizzled Young Vets, you know, maybe get called up to the main roster or something, you know, just selfishly kind of keeping them here in WWE. But, yeah, if they want to leave the company, they want to leave the company, do, you know, more power to them. I mean, you know, the Revival would not have the success they've had as FTR if they stayed in the company. So it's Drew McIntyre, you know, I mean, the list goes on. So, you know, do what you got to do. Ava Rain definitely, well, I think they're just calling her Ava now. I think her even,
yep.
her profile is just Ava. You know, think she is the de facto leader of Schism now. It kind of feels that way. You know, also with the, you know, the way that she played into the finish here tonight. Yeah, I I kind of liked that, you know, almost like that Eddie Guerrero-esque finish. Like Kelly said, this was really more of just kind of a storyline development match than anything. So everything else that I was going to mention has already been brought up. So in the interest of time, let's move on.
They went to their second leader, and they still haven't gotten to the right one. Zach Gibson is right there.
I know.
Oh, okay.
A lot of stiff drinks tonight after the show.
Yep. Oh, not enough.
Celebrating.
Oh, boy.
Celebrating Cinco de Mayo early.
Yeah. It's, it translates to 3 days of drinking. I'm ignoring all of my actual training in Spanish to make that true. Okay, so Bron Breakker and Trick Williams had, honestly, a pretty good segment. It makes sense for Trick to be stepped over on the way to Bron getting this one last match with Carmelo. And I thought, kind of under the radar, or maybe even over it, Trick had a really good night tonight in terms of solidifying himself on the face side of the ledger, which is work they needed to do, because he has always been the super heel irritant, kind of hype man. And he cheated a lot in the stead of Carmelo Hayes. So I thought this was a very good night. And I loved it. It was so obvious, but the line, Melo don't miss, but he effort does. I'm going to be there to pick up the rebound. I really liked it. Briggs, Jensen, and Henley, business. Brooks Jensen knows business. Good for him. I will say that scene didn't suck. I wasn't expecting to say that. Eddie Thorpe and Damon Kemp. Damon Kemp calling Eddie Thorpe a young boy, using taunts based on the fact that he was in the Young Lion program in New Japan. Really fun stuff for those of us who have been following Eddie Thorpe since he was Carl Fredericks in New Japan. Duke Hudson likes the sound of Duke University. It's stupid, and I liked it. Von Wagner and Mr. Stone looked at a scrapbook. There's a sentence I didn't think I'd say today.
actual character development for Von Wagner.
Yeah.
Because of the picture.
We knew, most of us, that Von Wagner was the son of Bo Beverly, real name Wayne Bloom. I have met so many people who know Wayne Bloom. Like, I'm in Minneapolis. I talk wrestling a lot, especially I work in a collectible shop. We sell some wrestling stuff. And people will go, oh, have you ever run into Wayne Bloom? I know him pretty well. I'm like, no, I'm the only person who hasn't. Can you make me run into him? Because I really liked the Beverly Brothers. Like, can you get a situation together where I'm running into Wayne Bloom? That has not happened yet. But had a son who's a much different body type. And apparently as a kid had a little Frankenstein thing going on over the top of his head. But even though Mr. Stone wanted to talk about that, Von Wagner did not. This was immediately the most interesting thing that they have ever done. Dijak cut a promo, and then Apollo Crews was the second person on the night to have a good scene with Trick Williams. Anything on that cleanup, Bruce?
Yeah, so Trick, Braun, Apollo, all that. Quickly on Braun, he went to yelling within three words, and so it's the same old stuff with Braun. It works better as a heel, but again, where are the layers, man? Like, you got to build up to that. The only thing that I was, and so you're right, it was good for them to plant these seeds of kind of the face Trick, especially with Hayes being more face now and kind of being like the loyal number two behind him, saying he's got to be there to get the rebound. But this could also be a moment they're setting up a Trick turn on Hayes in the future, because he brought up Kobe and Shaq. How did the Kobe and Shaq relationship end, Kelly?
Yeah, that was a weird one to bring up. For those of us who know the deal, it was genuinely surprising to hear Shaq muster some nice words after Kobe died. Like, it was, that's how badly that ended.
So, again, me looking at the macro and looking at the long term, this could be the seeds of an eventual turn by Williams on Hayes. Now, that could be a month down the line. It could be a year down the line. It could be 2 years down the line. But this could be – maybe they were testing it out, and this could be the moment. Because he had that little smile on his face when he said it, too. It could be one of those smiles like, I got your back, or I got your back until I don't. So – to me, I'm looking at these layers because, unlike with Braun, having these layers makes me more intrigued in you as a character and as a wrestler. And we've seen with Williams in the ring, too, his improvement has been to see in terms of the basics of professional wrestling. And he has that boxing background as well to help him in terms of, you know, one thing about boxers, they usually have really good footwork. And so with Trick, watch that footwork. And you see how he uses that footwork to kind of, same thing Grayson Waller, using that boxing experience to really make sure that he has good balance and his footwork is down in the ring. And I think footwork is such an overlooked aspect of professional wrestling, and that these two have it down. So, when it comes to Breaker, he just, again, there hasn't been enough of those, the development in terms of the layers when he cuts through his promos for me. Henley Briggs and Jensen in the bar, Jensen bringing up the whole way to expand the bar, cool. Him actually rebuffing the ladies who, I mean, talk about needing acting school. But, again, Jensen wasn't the worst actor in the scene. Kudos to him. However, while Damon Kemp, you know, the young boy line was fine, his acting to me tonight was very forced, especially him trying to turn away and then turn back and trying to get that smirk. I thought it was a bit forced. So, yeah. But I do like how they are setting this up as a feud for Eddie Thorpe. As Kelly said, those of us who have known him since Carl Fredericks are huge fans of him. So having him go against Kemp, I think this is a different type of opponent than he's been up against so far. Someone who has a real good amateur base, going to really push him in that way. And Kemp as a heel, his in-ring stuff works even better. So I'm really looking forward to this match. I believe it'll be next week. I didn't catch all the matches that Joseph brought up at the end of the show. But to me, we're seeing more development with Thorpe as well, talking about his background and not just about being Native American, but as a wrestler. And so I think, and his rightful indignation to being told to take the trash out from, well, it was just a water bottle, but having that thrown at you and told to take it out because you're the new guy, I think, again, just another relatable aspect to hopefully what I think they see as someone who will bottom out as a North American champion level. And if they get what they want, he could be an NXT, a men's NXT champion. So, and then the last thing with Von Wagner and Mr. Stone, a lot of us thought when Mr. Stone said, we are done, that they're going to be done. But yet again, they're right back with each other. And it's about the second or third time where they've done this kind of, ankle breaking on us, where we thought Stone was done with Wagner, only for them to not be done. I like this segment as a whole because not only do we get some background on Von Wagner as a person, most of us knew he's Cal Bloom, he's the son of Wayne Bloom. We knew that, but giving him that connection directly to the fans about his dad was in a tag team championship match at the famed 1992 SummerSlam from Wembley, right? That is something that gives fans something to latch onto. Further showing that picture of him, it gives him, you know, not every wrestler needs to have struggle as part of their story, but for a lot of them, it does help. And I think here, because we never really had anything with Von Wagner, I almost called him Cal Bloom, it's a great entry point for a lot of fans who see something in him and want to cheer for him, but haven't found that thing that makes them want to just support him more. And I do like how Stone said, you just got drafted. You have to let me help you. Tell me what this is. Let's go. Vaughn needing to open up, going a little too long at this point. But if the culmination of this happens with his introduction on he's a free agent to wherever he goes, then I think it's fine. But if they only maintain this on NXT and don't transfer that to wherever he shows up, and maybe as a free agent he can go through all three shows, then still, it's going to be a bit of a waste if they don't build on that here to the other two shows.
Nate?
All right. So I guess I'll start with Von Wagner because that's where we just were. I agree. I do like this segment, with him and Mr. Stone and Von Wagner looking at the scrapbook. It is probably the most interested I've been in the Von Wagner character. You know, and it was just a little, just a small little story building segment. And that's all I've asked for. That's all I've wanted. You know, we've talked about this a thousand times. Mr. Stone's even said it. Who is Von Wagner? And, you know, I think once Mr. Stone finally came out and said it, I, you know, kind of think that was part of the story. But before that, I don't know. You know, and I'm kind of glad to see that they're doing something like that with him, especially now with the call up to the main roster. You know, like you know, Bruce just brought up, he is a free agent. So, you know, having Von Wagner in the iteration that he was in up until that segment tonight, I think he would have just completely fell flat on the main roster. The main roster audience, the mainstream audience would essentially just see up is another big, tall, sweaty, you know, muscly guy. Let's, he'll be around for 6 months, you know, and I think that would be the perspective a lot of people would have with him. But if they do build off of that story and kind of give him a little bit more for the fans to latch onto and for us to, you know, sink our teeth into, I think it's going to help him tremendously in the long run. You know, seeing the picture of, I'm assuming him, I don't know if, you know, that picture with the scar on his head was actually him or not. I'm going to assume it was, you know, I have no idea. So, yeah, I had no idea that was something that he necessarily went through in his life. So I think kind of bringing some of those things to the forefront with those characters definitely humanizes them a little bit, and, you know, makes them a little bit more relatable. I think of Kane. You know, Kane was this, like, monster. And we start learning a bit more about him. You know, he was burned. You know, well, actually, I guess he was burned. You know, we knew he was burned before he even debuted, but still. But you know, you started learning more about him and as a person, as a character. And, you know, Kane up until that original unmasking was like one of my favorite wrestlers in wrestling. And even to this day, I love that character because it was that, you know, that monster that kind of learned how to become a human. Now, that's a completely different story for Von Wagner. He's more or less a wrestler that needs to learn how to become human, with some of his, especially the acting tonight. They clearly see big things for him, especially with him becoming a free agent. I don't think they would have put him in that status if they didn't see, you know, something big for him down the line. So, you know, I'm rooting for him. I really am. I hope he, hope he finds success in the main roster and, is that you know, monster that they're looking for. They want him to be the Eddie Thorpe, Damon Kemp. I there's not a whole lot that I have to say on that you guys didn't bring up already. Definitely looking forward to that match. You know, when it does happen, Trick Williams, Bron Breakker, even just the Trick Williams segments tonight in general with him and Apollo, Bron Breakker and Apollo Crews, those two separate segments. I think Trick Williams is, very underrated right now. Not necessarily by us here on the show, but I think just in general, yeah, I think we definitely see his, his acumen in the ring and the potential for him to be a big star. And I think, you know, the NXT WWE brass also see that, he's not Carmelo Hayes, but I think he's very close. And I definitely think that once Carmelo comes back from injury, it's not like he's actually injured, but once Carmelo comes back and, you know, defends his title a few more times, I could see Trick turning on him. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. I don't, like, you know, in the next like 2, 4, 6 months or anything like that, but I could definitely see like maybe even the final opponent for Carmelo Hayes being Trick Williams. And Trick becoming a big heel on NXT while Melo goes up the main roster. That's something I could see down the line too. So, I think I touched on the things I wanted to talk about there.
All right, folks, that is our show. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games, Nate.
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I write the NXT hits and misses. So, check that out on pwtorch.com. And it's been a while since I've plugged my YouTube channel, DEGETIME, Deej Time, over on YouTube. We take a therapeutic look at role-playing games, and right now we have probably my favorite game that we have been playing. It's a game called Cartoon Action Hour, where you make your own 80s cartoon. And right now, the 80s cartoon that we're playing is an action noir, live-action noir, called Detective Toilets. Think Aqua Teen Hunger Force style comedy, where we are four sentient toilets in a world of humans solving crimes.
I can do a really good impression of Meatwad, and I'm going to drop that on you when you were least expecting it. Bruce,
please do.
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253, and I have nothing special to plug.
Feeling got a job working for the city. All right.
That was a hell of a lot better than I expected.
I'm Kelly Wells, and I just remind you, folks, you should be inspired by the fact that Vic Joseph is doing well, because you can't be worse than Vic Joseph, and he's succeeding, so can you. All right, we'll see you in 7. Cheers.